say good afternoon to each one. Thank you for coming out here for what we call Conscientious Objectors Encouragement Day. And I had to think, why are we gathered here like this? I think Matthew 5:44 is the reason. Jesus says, "But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven." And also I had to think of the verse that says, Jesus said, "If you were of this kingdom, then would my servants fight." So it's a reminder that we are of the other kingdom. There's two kingdoms, and we are not of the kingdom of this world. And also that we do not take it for granted if the government gives exemptions for military service, as we're going to hear about the CAST service this afternoon. But let us be thankful for this opportunity that our government is allowing. We don't know if this will always continue. So I want to say thank you for coming out here. The first speaker will be Gary Rohrbach from Harmony, our congregation. The heading here says, "From GO to CO and His Personal Military Experience." And then there'll be several other speakers. Before he comes up here, let's all stand for a word of prayer. Father in heaven, we come before you this afternoon. Lord, I just want to thank you again for blessing us with another day and for this opportunity to gather like this. Lord, I thank you that we live in a land that has so far allowed us exemptions from military. Lord, help us to live in a way that show we believe this by our everyday lives. Help us to live showing that we are non-resistant, non-combative people. Lord, I just pray for each one speaking today. Lord, bless them, give them words to speak. I also pray especially for those going down to Haiti in the next weeks to serve there on the CAST team. Lord, just bless them. I pray for their safety. Lord, just pray for the rest of our day. Just go with and guide us. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated.
Morning, September 12, 1847, when the Marines began their artillery barrage on the Chapultepec Castle in Mexico. Now, this large stone castle, it was built on a high rocky hill overlooking the two western gates of Mexico City. In order to take the city, the castle needed to be secured. The artillery barrage lasted all day long, from sunup to sunset. And at sunset, they retired to prepare for the ground battle that was going to begin the next day. At 8 a.m. sharp, the following day, the Marines began their attack. They were immediately met with a strong resistance, a very strong resistance from the Mexican army, and casualties added up quickly. But they continued their advance. As the Marines reached the wall of the castle, the scaling ladders needed to climb over the walls, they were slow to arrive. And many of the Marines, they lost their lives, unable to find cover at the base of the wall. And as the ladders arrived, though, the men began climbing over the walls. They began scaling the walls and entering the castle. As the Mexicans seen that they were being overpowered, they fled. The Mexicans retreated into Mexico City. Later that night, the entire Mexican army, over 15,000 men, they fled the city of Mexico, the Mexico City there, and they retreated. And the following day, the Marines entered the city with no resistance. It was called the Battle of Chapultepec, and it lasted for only an hour and a half. That battle, though, essentially ended the Mexican-American War. 5 months later, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, it was signed, and it gave the United States the territories of New Mexico, Utah, Nevada, Arizona, California, Texas, and western Colorado. It was a great victory that day for the United States Marine Corps, and it was a great victory for the United States. And to commemorate that victory, a few years later, when the Marine Corps hymn was written, the first line of the hymn makes mention of the Battle of Chapultepec. That's, I don't know if you heard it real well, but the first line says, "From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli." Now, from the halls of Montezuma, that's in reference to the Battle of Chapultepec there outside of Mexico City. Like I said, it was a great victory that day for the Marines. But, you know, it didn't come without a great loss. Inside the castle, the Mexican army, they had over 1,000 casualties. And the Marines themselves, they suffered over 130 dead and over 700 wounded. You know, what was especially tragic that day for the Marines was that every single non-commissioned officer, that'd be from the rank of corporal and above, every single non-commissioned officer lost their life. You know, and to commemorate those non-commissioned officers, I don't know if you've ever seen what's called the Marine Corps dress blue uniform. Maybe I'll start with, have you ever driven through a town? A lot of towns have it nowadays where they have flags on their light posts, and you'll see pictures of veterans that served in the service. And you can always tell a Marine, he'll have his, it'll be a white hat with a black brim. What that is he's wearing what's called the dress blue uniform. It's the dressiest uniform that the Marine Corps issues. It'd be a white hat with a shiny black brim, and it'll be a very, very dark blue overcoat. It's basically black, a black overcoat, brass buttons down the front, brass buttons on the sleeves, and the pants will be a navy blue pants. And now all non-commissioned officers from the rank of corporal and above, they have the privilege of wearing the red stripe. It's called a blood stripe. They wear a red stripe down the side of their trousers. At their trouser seam, they have a red stripe. And with that red stripe, they call it the blood stripe. It's in memory of all the non-commissioned officers that lost their life at the Battle of Chapultepec. Well, there you have a little bit of Marine Corps history, just to begin here with. And I want to thank everybody for coming out this afternoon. It's a good crowd this afternoon, taking an interest in the CAST program, and you know, here to encourage the young men. I believe it's 9 young men that have volunteered to do some service work. I just want to thank them. And before we go any further, as we go on with our program here, 9 young men had volunteered to go for service. Before we begin, let's have some of those young men come up here. Could John Lapp come up here? Is he here? Is John Lapp here? Okay. How about Caleb? Is Caleb here? Can you come up here? Joe Glick? And kind of Ben and Abe right away. Ben and Abe Hirsch. I gave this talk 2 years ago at the CAST program, and I had incredibly good time. And I want to continue that. Okay, what I'm going to do with you boys, we're going to be talking about Marine Corps, we're going to talk about boot camp, and I want you boys to, of course you can't get I can't give you a really idea of what it's like, but we're going to start with a little bit of discipline here, show you what it's like. I want you all to line up in a straight row here, line up in a row, give yourself some room between each other. Okay, and here I am with my hand in my pocket, but you never put your hands in your pocket. Okay, in the Marine Corps, you never stick your hands in your pockets. You're going to put your feet together. I want you to stand in the position of attention. Your heels are going to be together. Put your heels together. Heels together. Feet at a 45-degree angle. Spread them. Spread them. Spread them. A little bit too far. Back off a little bit. I want you to take your hands. I want you to lightly curl your hands, your fingers, and I want you to put your thumbs on the outside, and put your thumbs go along your trouser seams there. There you go. I want you to look straight ahead. Don't smile. Don't laugh. Stick your chest out. A little more. Ah, forget it. Easy. Stand straight ahead. And I want you, you know, in boot camp, you're going to stand like that. You're going to stand like that for half hour, 45 minutes, an hour. And that's just the way it is. You know, a few weeks ago when Brother Rick had asked me if I'd be willing to speak here today, you know, I felt a little bit apprehensive about it. You know, for me, it's actually a struggle to speak about my little bit of time in the Marine Corps. It's a little bit of a struggle, you know, because it's in our circles, you know, a lot of you folks, most of you folks don't really know, you really don't know what it's about. And I always feel as though talking about it, it might tend to glorify that experience. And I've always been apprehensive of talking about it, and I've always made a conscious effort not to speak about it at all. I had to think. In fact, my wife and children actually know very little about that part of my life, almost nothing about that part of my life. You know, I'd ask Brother Rick, you know, what are you expecting? What do people want to hear? You know, what are they interested in? Because I had given this talk before, and I didn't want to give the same talk. And Rick responded with an email to me, and I thought, I'm going to read it verbatim here, what he said. He said, "Feel free to talk about boot camp life and experiences again. He said, I encourage you to share why you have embraced suffering love after being trained to kill. Part of why we do this is because, unfortunately, many young Christian men aren't thinking anything about these things, and we need to take them to it. By sharing the experiences of what it was like can definitely cause young men to understand the call to action that Jesus gives us." You know, I thought that was a really good summary of why we're here today, why we're here this afternoon. You know, that you young men, and I believe young ladies too, because you don't know what the future holds, you know, would seriously consider the path that you're taking in your life, realizing that the decisions that you make today will have consequences tomorrow. You know, whether those consequences are good or whether they're bad. You know, everything you do in life has consequences. And I think it's important that you don't ever take for granted the grace that you've been given, you know, as the privilege, as the hope of a conscientious objector, if that time would ever come, you know, that you wouldn't take it for granted. You know, as we see the world quickly, very quickly deteriorating around us, you know, there's no saying how much longer that grace we're going to be given. And I think we need to walk circumspectly. We need to walk. Just a little bit of my history, just to give you a perspective of where I'm coming from. I grew up on a dairy farm just south of Hamburg, not very far from here. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. It wasn't a bad home. It was a good home. Looking back, you know, I didn't appreciate what I had. I didn't appreciate what I had at all. But it was a dairy farm, and I'm not a farmer. I'm really not a farmer. Growing up on the farm, it was, like I said, it wasn't a Christian home. Church was, Sundays was just another day of the week. We never went on vacations at all growing up. We never went away at all. We worked 7 days a week. And to me, farming was a drag. I don't exactly remember what inspired me to join the Marine Corps. I really don't remember. But I looked at it, and I seen it as my ticket off the farm. And I didn't do well in school. I wasn't really good in school. I was very much an underachiever. I really had no direction in life. I had no goals. I was very much of a slacker. And I think I chose the Marine Corps, not really knowing a whole lot. You know, I thought that the Marine Corps was going to be a little bit more elite than maybe the Army or Navy, Air Force, or whatever. I just thought it was going to be more elite. And I thought maybe it'd be a little bit more of a challenge, really not knowing much about it. I really didn't know much about it. You know, those were the days before Internet, you know, before YouTube, Wikipedia, and I really didn't know what I was getting into. At the time, when I really had my mindset that I wanted to go in the military, I was 16 years old. And my parents weren't supportive at all. To this day, I'm still ashamed of the way I treated my parents during that time of my disrespect, my pesting. And I kept on pesting, and they finally signed off. See, you can't join the military, you can't join the Marine Corps until you're 18. You can join when you're 17 if your parents sign off. And I kept giving them a hard time, and they finally signed off, and that was August 23rd of 1983. It's when I signed my contract. I was 17 years old. And I signed up under what was called a combat option contract, meaning that after boot camp, I was going to be assigned to either infantry, artillery, or tanks. And before I signed up, it was just a combat option. I actually had no clue what I was going to be assigned to. And after boot camp, I was put into artillery, and that's what I did for 4 years, and I was in artillery. I was 17 then, and I actually still had one more year of high school I had to do, because I had signed up over the summer between my junior and senior year. I had one more year of high school I had to do. And it's kind of interesting because you need a high school diploma or a GED to get in the military. And like I said, I didn't do well in school. My grades were really poor, and most of that was because I just didn't apply myself. I was not interested in school. It didn't interest me at all. And But I realized going into my senior year that my junior year I almost failed. And I thought, I'm not going to have to get my act together here if I want to graduate and get out of here. So it was kind of funny at my senior graduation at Hamburg High School. I was surprised. I actually won an award. I won $100 for the most improved student from junior to senior year. I got $100 for that. And I graduated there in 1984 at 17 years old. It was end of May, beginning of June. I forget when graduation was. And I began my induction August 15th of 1984, about a month and a half later. And induction into the military, if you would get drafted, being called up to go to war, I believe everybody here in this part of the state would actually go to the New Cumberland Army Depot. Even if you're a conscientious objector, you go to the New Cumberland Army Depot. It's just south of Harrisburg, and it's what's called the Military Entrance Processing Station. They call it MEPS. Something about the military uses initials, abbreviations for everything. Everything is abbreviated. And if you get drafted, you're going to go to the MEPS station to get processed. And that's where I started. The first thing you do there as being an enlistee, being a volunteer, I believe it actually was two days spent at the MEPS station there. What they do is they give you a written test, a real long written test, covering all types of subjects, to see how smart you are, basically, to see what you're qualified, what kind of job you're qualified to do. And because I had signed up under a combat option, you didn't have to be real smart for that. But I took the aptitude test, and they also do a very intense background check, and also give you a physical to see if you're physically fit, and to also disclose if you have any kind of health conditions. What I've learned, actually, after being in the military like that, a lot of guys, there was a lot that would get out of the military and claim, oh, I got a bad back now because the Marine Corps hurt my back. And what they do is when you go in, they give a really intensive physical just to see what's wrong with you before you even go in. And there's two things that stick out to me about that day. It was actually 2 days. Number one was the physical. Here I am, just a young farm boy, fresh off the farm, going into this place. It's a very, very intimidating place. And having this strange doctor examining every single nook and cranny of my body that you can possibly imagine. And that was very intimidating to me. Something I'll never forget. I remember that to this day, what they did. Another thing that was really stands out to me was the drug questions. Drugs were real big back then. I guess we still are today, probably worse today. But I remember being taken into a room and being hammered. When was the last time you did drugs? I've never done drugs. And you're lying. You're lying. Tell me, when did you do drugs last? I've never done drugs. And they just keep hounding and hounding you because a drug, if you have drug issues, that would disqualify you from military service. But they were very pressing that I would have done drugs, but I never did. But those are two things, the physical and the drugs, the drug questions, that really stands out to me. I'm not sure if it was right then after that or if it was a later date within a couple of days or something like that, but you had to take the oath of enlistment. And the oath of enlistment, I'm not sure if it's for all services, but the oath of enlistment that I had to take is they take you into a small room. It's just a real small room, and it might have been like four or five other guys that were joining the Marine Corps at that time, and you had to, they had a flag in the corner, and a Marine stood up front, and he held a Bible. Okay, everybody raise your right hand. You raise your right hand and you say, repeat after me, I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign or domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me according to regulations and the Uniform Code of Military Justice, so help me God. At that point, you're officially enlisted in the Marine Corps. And from there, they put us on a plane and we flew to Charleston, South Carolina. And from Charleston, South Carolina, you take a military bus to Parris Island, South Carolina. Parris Island, it's a swampy area just right on the coast of South Carolina, not far from the ocean there. And they send you there to begin your 13-week boot camp, your 13-week Marine Corps training. Now, when you go to boot camp, you don't bring no luggage. All that you bring is the clothing on your back because you're not going to be needing anything. You guys getting tired? Get used to it. You know, up until this, the thing about that, I actually had to go on YouTube to actually try to remember a lot of things, because I've forgotten a lot of things. And I seen something that was different. I know for a fact, back when I went in, everybody comes in, they bring you in the bus at nighttime. Everything's scheduled to come in at nighttime. You come in the dark, and the first night there's no sleep at all. And they bring you in, I think some of it's psychological, it's sleep deprivation, you don't sleep. You know, and the bus pulls up Paris Island there, and I can still picture it very, very vividly in my mind, because actually going on YouTube and seeing the way things are there now, a lot of the buildings changed. It's more modern. It wasn't very modern back in the early 80s, and I remember the lights outside were just outside the buildings. They weren't very bright. It sticks out to me. It's just something I remember. It was dimly lit. Well, the bus stops, and you know, up to this point, from your recruiter to everything that you go through, up to this point, everyone talks nice and sweet to you. But once you're there, they got you. And the bus door opens up, and in comes this screaming maniac into the bus. And this drill instructor starts yelling, and right away he teaches you very quickly while you're still on the bus that you will not open your mouth, you will not speak unless spoken to, and the first words out of your mouth will be sir, and the last word out of your mouth will be sir. And then everybody yells, and everything that you do is going to be loud and it's going to be quick. And then everybody yells, sir, yes sir. And from that point on, like I said, everything is loud and fast. And then he tells you some other things, and his last words are, get off of my bus. And it's kind of interesting. Everything in boot camp, the drill instructors, it's like the drill instructors own everything. Everything is my. Get off my bus. Get into my building. Get into that. And the idea behind that is, you're right from the get-go, you're understanding that you're not a Marine and it's not yours. You're just there. You're not, and it belongs to the Marines. And everything they use is my. From there you enter receiving, and I believe the first night where we didn't sleep, the first night was you enter receiving. And they take you into a room, and it's a fairly large room, and there's rows of tables with each little, I shouldn't say tables, these little cubby holes with a little bit of a wall. And everybody, you run in there, and everybody stands behind a little cubby hole, and you gotta empty everything out of your pockets, your wallet, everything, the whole time there's drill instructors throughout that room yelling, just going ballistic over everything. And you got to empty everything out of your, they're giving you a pat down. If you have any rings on your finger, necklaces, earrings, your wallet gets out, and they come by and they rip open your wallet and they pour everything out and they dump everything around. They scatter it around. And, they're basically looking for contraband is what they're doing. They're looking for everything. And the whole time they're screaming and yelling and, then you take all that. That's all your belongings. That's all your belongings. All that you have left is just the clothing on your back, and you stuff all that in these little bags, and they take it away. They take it away. You won't get it back till you graduate from boot camp. I remember sometime during that first night, the very first night there, the barracks we were in, it was the building, and it was an old building. It was like an old barracks type building. It's a narrow building. Long, two stories high, wooden clapboard on the outside. I can still picture the building with rows of windows. And that very first night I was there, we heard a glass smashing, and one young fella threw himself through the window. He threw out. He was only there for a few hours, and he kind of lost his mind there. He jumped out of the second story window through the window. Sometime during the receiving lasts for a couple days then. The next thing they're going to do is they're going to give you a haircut. Everybody gets a haircut. And what I remember about the haircut is you're all standing in a line. You're behind each other. And I remember the drill instructors screaming and yelling, saying, if you have any bumps, knobs, or protrusions sticking out of your head, you will take your finger and you will put it on that spot, because if you don't, you will lose it. And so you're standing there, and you are tied against the person in front of you. Everything is always done really close. You're right in front of the person, right behind a person, and you can kind of see out of the corner of your eye, you see one hand here, you see another hand here, and you sit down, and they're right, and you take the clippers, and just all your hair comes off, and in fact, maybe every 2 weeks or so, you go back for a haircut. And the reason for is, one thing they want to do is they want to take away your identity. Take away your identity. Everybody looks the same. And the other thing is for sanitation. For the next 13 weeks, you're going to be dirty and you're going to be sweaty. And it's for sanitation, for cleanliness. And then you go through another physical. While you're in receiving, you're going to go through another physical. And that physical is just as thorough as the first physical that we went through back at the MEPS. And there they also put you through an x-ray. They x-ray your teeth. Reason being, if you do go to war, you get whatever, you get burned up. You're going to need your teeth as far as identification. I still have my x-rays on microfiche at home of my teeth from boot camp there. They're going to give you an initial physical fitness test just to see where you're at. They're going to rate you as far as physical fitness. Lots of paperwork, piles and piles of paperwork. Receiving lasts for a couple days. And then something else that really sticks out to me is immunizations, shots. I've been vaccinated against so many things. The one I remember is bubonic plague. I've been vaccinated against bubonic plague. But that's kind of interesting, getting the immunizations. You go down a line, there's fellows in front of you, fellows in back of you, and there's Navy corpsmen on each side of you, and they have these guns. They're guns. They just, boom, it's like a choom. You take a step forward, get the next one, choom. It doesn't seem real sanitary to me. I don't know how it works, but they shoot you. And they're shooting you in both shoulders at the same time. And you take a step, and you get another shot in the shoulders. And the last one, the last shot, when you're at the end of the row, you get the needle. They take a needle, and you drop your pants, and they give you a shot right in the rump. And that's penicillin. That's in case anybody came with any kind of sexually transmitted disease or something like that, to give you a shot of penicillin just for good measure. And what I remember is how sore you are from that shot in the rump. And what sticks out to me very much in my mind is how the next few days, how the drill instructors would play with you, and how they would stand up, sit down, and everything you got to do fast, and it's on the floor. See, you plop on the floor, stand up, sit down, and you're so incredibly sore from that shot of penicillin. I'll just never forget that. You're going to be issued all your uniforms while you're there. Not the uniforms that you take with you after you leave boot camp. Basically, you're just going to be issued your camouflage fatigues. You're going to be given a rifle, a helmet, your boots, and other things like a shoe polish, a boot brush to polish your boots, lots of different things. And at that point, like I said, receiving lasts for a couple days, and after that, they assign you to a platoon. And that platoon is who you're going to train with for the next so many weeks. And a platoon consists of around 70 guys, somewhere around there. 70 is what you start with, but by the time boot camp is over, that number might have dwindled, maybe down to the 50s or something like that. You know, one of the first phases is indoctrination, as far as they indoctrinate you into military history. That's where you learn about the Battle of Chapultepec, learn about Marine Corps history. Marine Corps started November 15th, 1775, just things I remember. Those early phases, the first phases there, they're going to teach you how to dress. And before I start here, Brother Rick was giving me a hard time. Something that I still do to this day, you're good. You're not good. You're awful. And you're fair. You straighten out. Your shirt, the edge of your shirt, the line on the edge of your shirt, it's going to come down. It's going to come down the edge of your belt. He's perfect. And it's going to come down right along your trouser, your fly. It's going to be a straight line. And to this day, I still do that. I get dressed and I straighten. And it has to be that way. You're good. Where'd you learn that? And it's kind of goofy, but I actually look for it. So brothers, if you ever see me looking, that's what I'm looking at. So you learn how to talk. want to give you some words, some military words. Shout out if you know what they are. What's the hatch? The door, thank you. What's the deck? The floor. What's the covering? Thanks, Bill. It's your hat. In the Marine Corps, you don't ever say hat. You don't ever say hat. It's a covering. What's your rack? What's that? What's your rack? Hit the rack. Bed. It's your bed. What's the head? Toilet. Very important word. Toilet. And if you need to use the bathroom, you don't ever say bathroom, and you don't ever say I. You don't ever say I. All your identity is taken away. You don't ever use the word I. You don't ever use the word me. Back then, at boot camp, they used the word private. I've seen on YouTube, today they use the word recruit. But back then it was, if you need to use the bathroom, sir, the private needs to use the bathroom. I shouldn't say that. Sir, the private needs to use the head. Sir. And there is no I or me. When you eat in the chow hall, you're going to eat in the chow hall. As you enter the chow hall, it's total silence. It's total silence. You don't talk. You don't speak. And you only have a few minutes to eat. And as you enter the chow hall, you take your tray and you hold it vertical in front of you. And you hold it. And everybody steps. You get to the line, put it down, get a plate, put your food on it. And you sit down. You only have a couple minutes to eat. You gotta scarf it down fast. And then, because when time's up, the drill instructor says, you know, time's up. And he's screaming and yelling. You take your plate. You clean yourself up there. But you only have a few minutes. They teach a lot of discipline. Everything is discipline. Obey immediately. Like we're doing here. This is easy. This guy here. You would be hurting. You would be hurting. Thumb along the trouser seam. Thumb along the trouser seam. You would be on the ground being severely punished right now for not holding your hands at the proper place. You're going to stand in formation like this. Sometimes you'll stand there for an hour. And that's where, if you folks that are in chorus know, you know, you don't lock your knees. Keep yourself a little locked. And because so often somebody will be standing there. It's a hot South Carolina, August, September day. And you'll be standing there and someone just drops over. When they drop over, the drill instructors are not real concerned. They're not real kind. They're down there screaming, yelling, shaking them, and get up. And you got to stand right back up again. And you're going to learn close order drill. Close order drill is, have you ever seen a marching unit? That's actually close order drill. Learn how to march. You're going to be marching, learning how to. The idea behind close order drill is how to move a large number of people quickly and efficiently. If I just told all you people, told you to do something, you'd all be disorganized. But close order drill, it's you're going to have the drill instructor is going to be telling you what to do. It's going to be four columns, and those columns could be literally hundreds of people long. But as long as you can hear the drill instructor's voice or who the instructor who's ever given the commands, you can easily move a large group of people, a large group of military people, in a very efficient manner. Something else that I really remember a lot that happened almost every week was scuzzing the floor in the barracks. Scuzzing the floor, that was something I really did not like to do. You know, most of you housewives, if you clean your floor, you're going to use a mop, but not in Marine Corps, not in the barracks anyway, in boot camp. Once you're out of boot camp, it's different. You're issued two towels in boot camp, one towel to dry yourself in the shower, the other one is for scuzzing the floor. And the way you scuzz the floor, you take your towel and you roll it up into a tube, kind of. And you're going to take your towel. What I want you four young guys to do, I want you to take your towel. You have a towel in your hands now. Get your hands off your... I want you to take it, and I want you to take your towel, and I want you to lean down, keep your feet on the floor, and I want you to put your towel on the floor, on the deck. Okay. Well, nope. We're getting ready to scuzz. Get your towel down. Stay there. And what it is drill instructor, he goes into the shower, and he takes a metal garbage can, and he fills it full of water. Well, he doesn't do it, and a recruit drags it out, drags it to the middle of the squad bay, and just dumps the water, a garbage can full. And you young men, you're all going to be at one end, and behind you is going to be another row of guys, behind them another row of guys. And I can still remember Staff Sergeant Jeffers. I can still picture his face getting down in your face. Are you ready to scuzz? And you go, are you ready to scuzz? And then he'll go, ready. And then he'll say, scuzz. And you go ripping up through the floor with your feet, with your rag on the floor, and that's how you mop the floor. It's called scuzzing the floor. And the guys behind you are catching water that you missed. There's guys on the side with squeegees, and you're going to push the water all out the back door of the squad bay. Okay, you can stand up. And the way that feels uncomfortable, you'll be like that for a long time, waiting for him to get finished saying, ready. And he always does it, ready. But something I remember very vividly. Something else you're going to learn to do is you're going to have to learn to swim. Swimming, you can't move on in boot camp if you can't swim, at least in the Marine Corps. You have to learn how to swim. And you'll swim with your boots on, with your full fatigues on, your jacket, pants, and your boots. You got to learn to swim. And you're not really being taught how to swim per se. You're being taught how to stay alive in the water, how to stay afloat. Something else, physical training. Every day there's a time for PT. It's called PT. It's PT time. Every day it's going to be training, exercise. And I always thought was one of the hardest was the 8-point bodybuilder. The 8-point bodybuilder. To me, it's like 8 ways to destroy your body. But now the way the 8-point bodybuilder works is, let me take my glasses off. You boys spread out a little bit. Face that way. Just spread out a little bit. What you're going to do is it's done in a cadence. 1, 2, 3, 4. And what you're going to do is you're going to go. It's going to be 1. It's going to be a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think you guys can do that. You got to think about it because you're going to mess up. You're going to go down, back. You're going to spread your legs. You're going to bring them together. Do a push-up. You're going to stand up. Okay, and we're going to help them. We're going to count for them, all right? We're going to do it slow. Come away from the wall just a hair. This is something, that we did all the time. Ready? Here we go. Get ready. We're going to go down first and you jump back. Okay, here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You guys are pathetic. We're going to do it again. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Wait, hold on. I see what's wrong here. It's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. One more time here. We got to see if you can do it. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. You're pretty good. Now everybody, we're going to get them going here. Let's go. Here we go, everybody. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, very good. You can see how that could tire you out a little bit. But you go and you do that for a long period of time, a long, long period of time. It goes to the point, everything that's done is done to the point where you can't do it no more. You do it till the drill instructors, and once somebody starts, it seems like, you know, like the hens in the chicken house, how they pick on the weak hen. if there's someone that can't keep up or something like that, it's very, very intimidating. This big drill instructor in your face, literally in your face, and his round hat, he has it cocked on back, and his hat actually hits your forehead, and he's pounding, and he is screaming as loud as he can. And once they really get going on someone, then two other drill instructors might be coming, and they'll be all in somebody's face, just screaming and yelling, and it's actually extremely, extremely intimidating. And something, you know, somebody messes up, everybody suffers. And one of the worst things is you got to go, they'll say, get in the pit. Outside a certain area, it's a big sand, real huge sand area, and that's the pit. And in the sand pit, they'll have you scream as loud as you can, running in place, with your knees touching your hands straight in front of you. Can you do that? You don't have to scream. Run in place with your hands straight out in front of you to your hips. Run, your knees touch your hands. Go. You're good. Okay, very good. You're going to do that so you can't go anymore. You have nothing left in you. Lay down on your backs, feet facing the people. Lay on your back. Something else that was so hard. We're going to do leg lifts. You're going to keep your hands aside of you. Put your hands right aside of you. Keep your feet together. You're going to lift your legs right now about 12 inches off the ground. And just stay there for a while. One of the other things when a drill instructor said dig, everybody knew what dig was. Dig was something that was really, really hard as well. Most of these were done for punishment. Because you can't go forever. You're going to get tired. Right now your stomach's starting to feel it. Okay, you can stand up. You just want to wound them. You don't want to kill them. Something that was really hard was basically what you call mountain climbers, but they call it dig. You're going to get down. You know what a mountain climber is? Get down and just do this. Okay, try that. Go down and do a mountain climber. It's called dig. And you're going to do that, and you're in a sand pit, and so it makes it awkward with your feet in the sand, and you're just going to keep going and keep going till your feet don't even leave the ground. They just drag. Your feet just drag forward and back. You're so exhausted. Okay, very good. You can see how that can get tiring here after a while, too, if you're in sand. But that's something that's... a lot of those are punishment. And what they would do often is to... they'd be yelling and screaming, dig, dig, dig. And they'd go, leg lift, and you got to spin around, leg lift. And I run in... There's a bunch of other exercises. Everything is done so you just can't go no more. You're just so exhausted. Something else, probably one of the biggest things that sticks out to me that I remember the most is the gas chamber. I think because up boot camp for the most part, it's just the physical stuff for me. It was hard, but the drill instructor is really intimidating. But by law, they can't touch you. They can't hurt you by law. They do push you around. You get pushed around, but they don't physically hurt you, and you know that. In a way, to an extent, it's just a game. But the one thing, the gas chamber, to me, the gas chamber, you can't make a game out of the gas chamber. That what they use for training is CS gas, it's tear gas. It's really strong tear gas, and that's real. It ain't a game. And what I remember to me was one of the worst things was the gas chamber. And what they do is back then, if I remember right, it was just a round Quonset metal shelter thing, and you went inside, and they only brought in so many men at a time, and you walked in, and a bunch of men. It might be about as maybe not quite as long as this stage, and you have your gas mask on your hip. It's inside of a pouch. And I just remember this one little wire hanging from the ceiling with a little light socket and this little light bulb. And his room was really kind of dark, just this little light bulb burning. And below it, there was just a real small table. And there was like a coffee can. And they were lighting this stuff, and it would leave off this smoke. It would fill up, and it was CS gas. It was tear gas. And what they're doing is they're training you how to use your gas mask. And you get in there, and the gas from the previous group was evacuated. There's no gas in there. You walk in there, and then they'll start lighting this solid that's leaving off this smoke. And they'll give the command, gas. This is the signal, is gas. I say gas. And, you're like panicking. You flip open your case, and you put the gas mask on. And you'll be taught how to put the gas mask on, how to put it out, how to clear it. You put it on. You hold the intake shut, and you blow out. You blow out hard to try and evacuate any gas that's inside the mask. And then after you blow out, you put your hands over the intake and suck in to try and make sure the mask seals fast to your face. Because if it doesn't seal fast to your face, and in the gas chamber, it happens to some people, you want it to seal fast, that you're not smelling the gas. And then what they'll do is you'll go through some training as far as you're in the room. They fill it with gas, and you have your gas mask on. And then they'll go by, and they'll tell you to crack your mask. You crack your mask, and just instantly you start coughing. Okay, you close your mask up, and then clear it again. Then you got to clear it. You got to clear your mask. And but the worst part then is at the end, and that's kind of just, I think it's just a fun thing for the drill instructors. Then you're in there, and the room is filled with gas. And they'll say, okay, everybody turn to your left. I remember the door was over there. Everybody turn to your left. Put your hands. Everybody turn to the left. Put your hands on the person in front of you. Okay, now take your one hand, you're going to take your right hand, and you're going to pull your gas mask completely off. Pull your gas mask off, and instantly, okay, you can turn around again. Instantly, I can't describe the feeling of this tear gas. Instantly, all the snot that's inside of your head leaves your body quicker than you can even imagine. And it's not just like you get a runny nose. It's literally dripping off your chin. Your eyes are instantly burning. And guys are yelling. Guys are yelling. And it is totally wild. And I think I was in the second group that went in. And when that door came open and I seen these guys coming out, I thought, oh, man. And guys, they get out. As soon as they get out, they scatter. They're on the ground. They're on their hands and knees. And the snot is just running, it's just dripping off your face. And it takes about, I don't know, 10 minutes or so to kind of clear up, and then it's done. To me, the gas chamber was probably psychologically the hardest thing, was the gas chamber. Next thing real quick is rifle marksmanship. You spend a whole week learning about your rifle, how to use it, how to clean it, how to take it apart, how to shoot. And that lasts for an entire week before you ever shoot a bullet, before you ever shoot a round. Then the following week, they have what's called a live. You go to the rifle range and you have a shooting, live shooting. That lasts for a week, and you learn how to shoot from the sitting position, the standing position, the kneeling position, and the prone position. Prone being laying down, and you shoot at 200 yards, 300 yards, and 500 yards. And you have to qualify. You have to qualify with the rifle. The Marine Corps says that every no matter what your job is in the Marine Corps, every Marine is a rifleman, a basic rifleman, and you need to qualify. If you don't qualify with the rifle, you don't move on. You also learn about basic infantry, how that's operated. You learn hand grenades, land navigation, hand-to-hand combat, rappelling tower, 47-foot tower where you rappel off of. That's kind of interesting. The idea is to get you so you're not afraid of heights. And that's kind of interesting. At that time today, I'm afraid of heights. Back then, I wasn't. And there would be young men that were afraid of heights. And you'd be out over the tower, 47 feet, and with your rope, and you'd be there. And just to hear, you know, guys would be crying, I'm afraid. And just, I could just picture and hear the drill instructors just screaming and yelling at them as they're hanging over there, screaming, I'll cut the rope, I'll cut the rope. And you know, no, and people are crying, no, I can't do it, I can't do it. But I remember that. There's a lot of miscellaneous things. It's amazing to me the things that stick into my head. Like I said, I don't really remember a whole lot of things, but there are certain things that stick into my head, and that's the military rank system, the Marine Corps rank system. I can give that verbatim. Private first class, lance corporal, sergeant, staff sergeant, gunnery sergeant, master sergeant, first sergeant, master gunnery sergeant, major of the Marine Corps. And then in the officer ranks, you have second lieutenant, first lieutenant, captain, major, lieutenant colonel, brigadier general, major general, lieutenant general. I can always remember that, and it's amazing to me how hard it is to memorize scriptures, but I can never forget those things. You also learn about, there's something else you have to learn, it's called your general orders. There's 11 general orders, and it's a pretty lengthy list of what they call basic orders. And I can remember my first one: sir, the private's first general order is take charge of this post and all government property in view. That I remember, I can't remember the rest. But there's just so much more, a lot of things, things about military life. Looking back, really the main purpose, I think, of boot camp is to, teach the basic skills of the military and to get you indoctrinated actually out of civilian life and into military life, because it's a lifestyle change. It's definitely a lifestyle change, and it's very much a cultural change. You guys can sit down. Thank you. Once boot camp was over, it was something that I never really, it was just something you did. It was something you did. Once it was over, I really never gave it much thought once it was over. It really wasn't, that part of my life was over after I was out. Now, if you remember, when I started, I told you about, the Battle of Chapultepec. Battle of Chapultepec. Well, the thing about the Battle of Chapultepec there is, it actually didn't happen. It was made up. The battle happened. Yeah, the battle itself happened. There was the Battle of Chapultepec, and it was the battle that won the Mexican-American War. And also the first line of the Marine Corps hymn was written to commemorate that battle, the Battle of Chapultepec. But that thing about the red blood stripe I told you about, the red stripe, blood stripe down the side of the pants, that there, it's all made up. It didn't happen. In fact, 10 years earlier, 10 years before the Battle of Chapultepec, it was President Andrew Jackson who ordered the red stripe be put on the side of the pants of non-commissioned officers in the Marine Corps. It had nothing to do with the Battle of Chapultepec. Military historians, they know for a fact that there was quite a few non-commissioned officers that died that day at the battle, but they do know also for a fact that it wasn't all of them. It wasn't this mass slaughter of the non-commissioned officers. The whole thing is just folklore. It's military history that's told as fact, but it's actually a legend. It's a Marine Corps legend. It wasn't real. And for me, being asked to stand here this afternoon, and speak about my boot camp experience, in my mind, over the years, different folks have asked me, what was the Marine Corps like? And right away, they want to go to boot camp. Like boot camp was something special, and it really wasn't. To me, it really wasn't. Really for me, boot camp, it only lasted for 3 months. Okay, that was just 3 months out of actually a 4-year enlistment. And I don't want to badmouth anyone, because I get it, But it's after boot camp, as you enter the fleet. In the Marine Corps, after you finish boot camp, you go into what they call the fleet. You go out into the service. And, it's after boot camp and you enter the fleet, that's when actually reality, reality really sits in, And so much of what you did every day, it was just a game. It was just a game. It was like your greatest purpose in life was to advance the careers of those who were in leadership over you. And many of those leaders, they weren't fit to lead. So much of the time in that 4 years that I spent there, so much of that time, what I remember, it was boredom. It was a lot of boredom. It was a lot of drudgery. A lot of politics. Politics is in the military so bad. And that's one of the big reasons why so many men, after their first enlistment, get out. I think the retention rate in the Marine Corps is 40%, meaning only like 40% re-enlist after their first enlistment. And a lot of bad attitudes, drugs, alcohol, pornography. I was thinking to myself, I'm not speaking as a person that had a chip on my shoulder. I did well. I was thinking about, you know, just to give you a little bit of context. I did well. I did actually really well in my time in the Marine Corps. I went in when I was 18 there, and I went into boot camp as a private. I got out of boot camp as a private first class, and then 7 months later, I was promoted to a lance corporal. And then 7 months after that, I was meritoriously promoted to a corporal. When I became a non-commissioned officer, I was 19 years old and I was non-commissioned officer. I had an artillery piece. I had seven men that were mine. I had a truck, and I was in a place of authority at 19 years old. I was chosen to go to what they call section chief school in order to be section chief. Section chief is meaning you're in charge of a gun, or in charge of a howitzer. And I went to section chief school. I graduated first in my class in section chief school. Later on, I went to North Island Naval Air Station in San Diego, California. Just me and one other fellow were chosen to go to nuclear training. I was nuclear trained for nuclear warheads and artillery pieces. I graduated third in that class. I also was sent to what they call a squad leader's course. It's an advanced infantry course. I wasn't even in infantry, but I was sent to an infantry course there, small unit leadership course. I graduated, I believe, second in that class. 1 year, I only did it 1 year. Every year you have to take a physical fitness test, and you have to meet up to certain standards. The best score being 300. 1 year, I was second in my unit. I rated 287 points. I was just like a half a minute away on my 3 mile run to getting a perfect score. My time there, it's called a meritorious mass. It's a letter of commendation. I received three meritorious mass letters of accommodation. I did really well. But you know, when it was my time to get out, I struggled with that, whether I should get out or not. But you know, the reality was, you know, just the lack of reality in the military. To me, it was just the lack of reality. You know, I gave it all that I got, you know, but there was still no reality there. You know, to me, reality was laying in my rack at night at 20, 21, 22 years old, wondering, what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to do? I joined the Corps as a young man with no goals, no purpose. I just wanted off the farm. And 4 years later, I realized that I wasted 4 years of my life. You know, I was pursuing pride, I was pursuing vanity, and I had absolutely nothing to show for it. You know, one thing that I did gain in those 4 years, though, was maturity. I did gain maturity. I gained enough maturity to realize the importance of family and the importance of surrounding yourself with people who truly love you and care for you. And I learned to appreciate what I had. Well, my EAS, it's called your Expiration of Active Service, was August 16th, 1988. You always remember your EAS. EAS, that's something, you know, hey, when's your EAS? You know, such and such. And a term you always use when your EAS was getting short was, hey, I'm short. You know, don't bother me, I'm short. I'm almost out of here, I'm short. That was a term, I'm short, I'm a short timer. I got out August 16th, 1988, and it was something I really look forward to. I came out of the Corps and I came back home and I just fell into a deep depression. It was really hard struggling to change culture. And I think I've already heard folks here that might have been on long time missions coming home might find it hard to settle back into life here in America. And for me, getting out of the Marine Corps and re-entering civilian life was very hard. It was about a year later that I met my future wife, and she was a Christian. And it was through a friend that we started attending a conservative Anabaptist Brethren church. And it was there that I first heard the gospel preached to me. In my life, I never, ever heard anything that would come close to the gospel in my life. I never heard it before. And the thing about the gospel to me was, especially at that time, was it made sense. It just made sense. You know, the idea of, you know, playing the game in the military, like I said, you just can't imagine the nonsense and just the stupidity that every day is filled with. And the gospel made sense to me. You know, the idea of being non-resistance, you know, the idea of going to war, you know, we're going to go to war with China. Well, why would we go to war with China? Well, because they're our enemies. Well, why are they our enemies? You know, they're just people. You know, they're people created in the image of God. And it's so futile. You look at Vietnam, you know, now we're relatively, Vietnam's still a communist country, but we're relatively close to them. You know, we buy all their t-shirts. It seems so foolish to me. You look at Germany. Germany is one of our greatest allies. And, you know, during World War II, all the lives that were lost in Germany, Americans and Germans, because of, you know, it makes no sense to me, the useless waste of life. And to me, the gospel made sense. You know, it filled a need that I couldn't explain. For me, it gave direction and it gave purpose in a wasted life. When I was 19 years old, you know, I was promoted to corporal, and I had the privilege of wearing the red blood stripe down the side of my dress blue pants in honor of those who died at Chapultepec, so they say, which means absolutely nothing to me. You know, because today I have the honor of being covered by the blood of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Isaiah 53:5 tells us that He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon Him, and with His stripes, it's with His stripes that we are healed. You know, 2 years ago, I gave a talk at the CAST program at Harmony, and I spoke about Marine Corps boot camp. And as I spoke about my experience in boot camp, I was followed by Brother Moe Stoltzfus, who spoke about being a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War. Well, I'm here today, and Brother Moe is gone. You know, I can't help but think that, you know, here on this earth, you know, there's nothing more real. If you want to talk about reality, there's nothing more real than standing over a box and looking down at the face of a loved one. You know, death is as real as it gets. You know, everything that Brother Moe ever did on this earth was leading up to that day when he'd be lying there. Everything he'd ever done. You know, before you get out of Marine Corps boot camp, if you serve faithfully, you get what's called the Good Conduct Medal. The Good Conduct Medal. It's just a little token of your service, your good conduct. You know, we always talk about, you know, that if the draft should come here, you know, have you lived a life that's worthy of being a conscientious objector? You know, will your testimony stand? Will your testimony stand if you have to stand before a board and give an account of your life? You know, I'm not sure if that's really, though, the best question to be asking, though. You know, I think that's just a technicality. I think it's just something we use to pressure our young people. You know, are you going to be able to stand when that day comes? You know, I think really the question should be, the question we all need to ask ourselves is, you know, when your service, each one of you, when your service here on this earth is done, you know, not just 4 years, but a lifetime, you know, when that service day ends, you know, I want to challenge you this afternoon. You know, will you have lived a life worthy of hearing those most glorious words that only death can bring? Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Well done. May God bless.
Thank you for listening to this message. We trust that it has been a blessing to you. If you would like additional sermons or a catalog, please visit our website at effortofministries.org. Call us toll-free at 855-557-7902 or write to us at Effort of Ministries, 400 West Main Street, Suite 1, Effort of Pennsylvania, 17522. You are welcome to copy this message for free distribution. This ministry is supported by your donations. May the Lord Jesus bless you.